From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The 2017 UN climate meeting in Bonn, Germany, wrapped up on Saturday, only somewhat meeting the goals that delegates had set out for themselves. The COP23 meeting, taking place 2 years after the historic Paris Accords were reached, was meant to draft rules and processes for turning the COP21 agreement into action. But even working through the night at the last possible hour, delegates ended up putting off major issues to 2018. Among those on the front lines of the environmental activism at COP23 were numerous representatives of indigenous groups and communities from all over the world, including the United States. The Indigenous Environmental Network, in particular, confronted promoters of cap and trade or carbon pricing, saying such schemes were, quote, false solutions to mitigating the climate crisis. IEN released a new report on carbon pricing during COP23. Joining me to tell us all about it is Dallas Goldtooth. He is the Keep It in the Ground organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. He is a Dakota cultural language teacher. He is a co-founder of the Indigenous comedy group, the 1491s, and he just returned from COP23 in Bonn. Welcome to the program, Dallas.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So what exactly was it that the COP23 negotiators achieved? The Trump administration was not very visible, and they had a terrible White House-sponsored panel promoting fossil fuels. But the New York Times is saying that actually behind the scenes, there were some State Department negotiators that were not throwing up roadblocks. What was the final outcome of this big meeting?
Well, for those that don't know, like the Conference of Parties, also known as COP, has been a process that's been initiated for a number of years. When we say COP23, that means we have the parties of the world have come together 23 times to come up to some agreements on how to address, adapt, and mitigate climate change. But COP21, which was in Paris, was a significant point because they had finally come to an agreement, and that was the Paris Accord or Paris Agreement. And what the meeting that they just had in Bonn, COP23 was really a conversation on how to operationalize the agreement that was made in Paris. How do we actually implement the decisions that were made in Paris into a functional document or into an actual functional platform that nation states can now enact? And it's been very, very difficult for a lot of communities of color, and especially frontline communities, because the Paris Agreement was lauded as this amazing victory, this moment where countries are finally going to recognize the need to address and mitigate climate change. But hidden within the actual document itself and within the negotiations, we've come to realize that there's a lot of different ways of or ineffective or actually actions that go counter to the need that is the needs of bringing the temperature of the world lower. It's counter to actually addressing environmental justice issues, not only in indigenous communities, but in a lot of communities of color across the world. And so we, as far as the Indigenous Environmental Network, as a part of the It Takes Roots delegation, which is a delegation of indigenous, black, and brown folks from the United States, really wanted to make sure we were present at COP23 to really hold nation states accountable for their decisions and how it affects those on the front line. You know, I think that there's a lot of questions, a lot of decisions were pushed, were tabled until to have a further discussion next year in Poland at COP24. And, you know, overall, it's a very, very frustrating process because the more we wait and the less aggressive we are in acting to address climate change, the worse it gets for all of us.
So you have these meetings at least once a year where so much effort and energy goes into organizing them, getting thousands of people together. Just the carbon impact, carbon footprint of these meetings is also significant. And in the end, time after time after time, these meetings come away with just not enough achieved and constantly putting off the really important solutions that would actually make a difference to later and later, passing the buck to one another. How important is the role of outside activists, of agitators at these meetings to hold a flame to the feet of delegates to say, you're just not doing enough?
Well, you know, the past, you know, number of decades, time after time, we've demonstrated that the true change makers, the true champions of change when it comes to addressing social justice, racial justice, and climate justice are the people. Those of us who are willing to take to the streets to voice our opinion, those of us who are willing to put pressure on our elected leaders to make the changes that are needed. And that's why it's really important to have civil society as the UN delegate, as the UN defined, you know, non-nation state official negotiators. We are civil society organizations. It's really important for us to be in those spaces to really make sure that these countries and the negotiators know that they're being watched, that the, whatever they're bringing to the negotiating table is being criticized and scrutinized to the fullest degree by often those who are going to be dealt with the effects of climate change first and foremost. You know, we're seeing a massive, we're seeing massive climate chaos happening all across the globe with hurricanes, floods, droughts, fires. And, you know, it has real life consequences for many people, for millions, billions of people on this planet. And so it's just essential for us to make sure our voices are present in those rooms, and also to push back against the false solutions that are being promoted in these spaces. Look at the Paris Agreement and COP21. There wasn't a single mention of fossil fuels in the actual Paris Agreement.
Wow.
It's absurd for us to ignore, for the nations to ignore the main contributors to the rise in greenhouse gas emissions and the rise of global temperature on this planet without acknowledging those that are actually creating it.
Now, in COP23, apparently one of the issues that had the most progress was this issue of climate risk insurance, catastrophe risk insurance. It sounds a little wonkish, but this idea that if you have proper insurance, at least those people who suffer the impacts of climate change, because of course the whole idea is that climate change is unpredictable, it has an unpredictable impact, so you never know when the next hurricane is going to be the biggest one, and that this insurance can actually pay out to help communities return to normal. But again, even if that was a big achievement, and I'm not sure if it was, again, that wasn't the discussion on actually mitigating climate change and actually reducing carbon emissions. China was very present at the COP23 meeting, spoke a good, you know, line about it, but we saw emissions rise in 2016 primarily because of China's return to coal use. So people seem to just be avoiding the issue of what's causing climate change.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that what's really frustrating to a lot of environmentalists and organizers and activists in this struggle is that incrementalism is killing us. It is literally putting us on, and us being all of creation and Mother Earth on the chopping block. We have to make significant strides, drastic changes to really bring us into a place where we're going to lessen the effects of climate chaos. There's so much that's out there right now. There's so much the world is hot as it is that we can't ignore. We can't actually get away from the climate chaos. What we're trying to do our very best is not make sure it doesn't get worse. And, you know, you're talking about the taxes in this whole tax system, the insurance system. You know, there's a ongoing movement, a part of the fossil fuel divestment campaign, is that we've come to realize that a number of the world's largest insurance companies also insure fossil fuel companies and help fossil fuel companies make sure that they have the insurance to get financing from banks. And so if we're going to talk about, talking about insurance, we also have to hold these companies accountable for how they're supporting the fossil fuel company that's causing the chaos that they're going to have to pay out to. So it's a whole cycle. And I think that really, it takes Root's delegation that went to Bonn, which is a part of, it was made up of the Indigenous Environmental Network, Climate Justice Alliance, Grassroots Global Justice, Rights to the City, some amazing frontline people of color organizations, just by saying, look, we can talk till we're blue in the face about, you know, some of the mitigation and adaptation to climate change. But if we don't talk about systems change, if we don't talk about the actual system that's creating all of this and promoting all of this, then we're not going to actually see any lasting change. That's why we push back against carbon market mechanisms and carbon trading, carbon pricing. It's because it's all a part of the same system. There's no change.
So these are mechanisms that attempt to work within a neoliberal capitalist framework, which is what has, in part, caused the crisis in the first place. Let's talk about carbon pricing or cap and trade, carbon taxing. There's a number of names for this, and different places have tried to implement this in slightly different ways, but basically the idea is the same, that if you put a price on carbon or a tax on carbon, that somehow it's going to use market forces to mitigate carbon emissions. Governor Jerry Brown of California was pushing this as a solution to climate change at COP23 in Bonn. He was being hailed as a climate hero, and well, he sees himself in that way. But what does your new report on carbon pricing, which you refer to as basically a critical perspective for community resistance, what does it conclude about carbon pricing?
So, this new report that the Indigenous our Indigenous Environmental Network and Climate Justice Alliance put out together really opens up the door, opens the conversation, about this argument that a lot of the countries of the world, and you mentioned Jerry Brown, the governor of California, has been promoting this argument that capitalism will save the problems that capitalism created, which is really absurd. It's backwards. It's this idea that polluters and our corporations or fossil fuel companies can pay to pollute. They basically buy credits. They buy a forest over in the Amazon. And therefore, if they buy so much of that carbon that's captured in that forest, they can pollute that much whether they're extracting out of the tar sands, or they can pollute it at the refinement point. What we are really trying to demonstrate is that we are really in an amazing place of change, where we have to really evaluate this capitalistic system that is causing widespread inequities across our society. And we have to really have a critical analysis to say that capitalism is not going to save us. Carbon markets, carbon trading, carbon pricing is not the solution to the way forward. We have to create regenerative, renewable, sustainable communities based on local economies as the correct step for ahead.
Right, so putting a price on carbon means that these corporations will simply add to the cost of doing business a little extra that somehow then may go into funding some minimal environmental mitigation, just leaving everything else in place. And that's really, sounds like a scam.
it's a racketeer. It's a racketeer business right now. It is a total complete scam. There has been no proof that cap and trade and carbon trading is actually effective. The European Union tried their own cap and trade system, and it failed. It completely, utterly failed. Now California is trying to promote a system that hasn't even been tested. They're saying, "Well, look, other people just haven't done it right," but it's still a scam, nonetheless. If you want to talk about really concrete examples, Chevron. Chevron has a larger oil refineries in the Bay Area of California, and Chevron is also promoting more oil expansion in the Amazon, as well as importing tar sands oil out of Alberta. So they're going to buy a patch of forest in Washington State, and that patch of forest, they're going to say, okay, that patch of forest has this much carbon, so it's going to allow us to continue to dig oil out of the ground in the tar sands, or it's going to continue for us to extract oil out of the Amazon, and it equals out. It's carbon neutral. We're good to go. We're saving the planet. There is no factual evidence that actually is effective. What carbon that's stored in the trees, and carbon that's coming out of the ground with oil, or carbon that's being emitted. They are actually not equal, but they're trying to tell us that is, and we are going to stand against it.
Dallas, give out a website where people can find out more about the work that the Indigenous Environmental Network is doing.
Yeah, you can check out ienearth.org. That's ienearth.org. You can also check out ittakesroots.org. ittakesroots.org. Both of those have the carbon pricing report that we just released. You can also find out a lot of different information about all the other fights that we're a part of. I just really want to plug is that we spend so much time talking about what we're fighting against that we really have the opportunity to talk about what we're fighting for. And it's really going to come down to a just transition towards local renewable energy and food systems and local economies, living, vibrant, renewable, regenerative economies that we self-determine for ourselves. So, like, I think that is a critical part of this conversation that we always have to continue to uplift. And you can learn more at ienearth.org or ittakesroots.org.
Dallas, I want to thank you so much for all your work and for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much.
Dallas Goldtooth is the Keep It in the Ground organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. He just returned from the climate meeting in Bonn, Germany. We've been discussing what came out of COP23, as well as a new report by IEN on carbon pricing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.